Welcome back to the Talking Footy podcast. Each Wednesday across the footy season, we're going to talk with the biggest names in the game. I'm Tim Watson, and this week we're talking to Paul Salmon. As part of this podcast, I discuss with Fish how he nearly ended up at Carlton, dealing with the great Kevin Sheedy.
I was mesmerised by him. Not in a healthy way, I think, in retrospect. I kind of was in awe of him.
Coping with newfound fame, he burst onto the scene. What he's most proud of in his career.
To me, playing 300 games after my Rico was the thing I'm most proud of.
Dealing with a premiership loss and kicking 10 goals in a game and not being the best player on the ground. That was back in 1993. And of course, he's moved to Hawthorn and much, much more. He's a long-time teammate of mine, but he's since moved on to become, post-football, a successful businessman. We're talking footy. Well, Fish, let's go right back to the beginning. As a child in Ringwood, growing up, football family?
Footy family, Tim, I was the fourth son. I got three older brothers. It was a pretty competitive household. My dad was a local coach, North Ringwood, Baronia. So he was my first hero. Loved going to the local footy to watch him. Lots of fond memories of that. You know, earliest memory was he went up to play footy for Kerrang, Coach Kerrang up in the northern districts. But most of it was local around home. So I got happy memories, but it was a pretty competitive household. There's four boys within 6 years
right.
One another. And it was usually me pairing up with the oldest brother and the middle two, and it was on all the time. Yeah.
They built you around a bit?
Yeah. So lots of scars, mate. Emotional.
Emotional.
And otherwise. No, it was good. It was very vibrant sort of. It was a great way to cut your teeth in terms of, you know, you don't come inside, as you probably understand, you don't come inside until you've got a win. And I was just, I don't know if it was an asset or a liability, but I painfully, like a lot of athletes, competitive. But almost to the extreme. I was prepared to burn relationships on the basis of a win or a loss.
Were your brothers talented footballers too?
Oh, they would say they were, but I think they were good athletes. You know, I remember just being coming into primary school. My oldest brother just left primary school to go to high school, and having other children in the school talk about my brother and how quick he was, how good he was as a footballer. And my middle two brothers were always very fast too. So I have those memories of being prominent in terms of a family in that regard. But my oldest brother was the only one. He had a training run at Essendon or a few, broke his arm motorbiking, and he just didn't have he would say he could have made it. But there's a lot of those people out there, isn't there? He was about 6'4", a big boy, key position. But I don't think he had the level of commitment required. Yeah.
What about the talent, athletic talent in the family, like the extended family?
Nothing in note. Yeah, look, maybe I did. Dad was athletic. I mean, but again, you know, his era dragged out of school one day, a good student, as I understand it, and someone who loved his schooling at 15 or 16, told by his dad to get to work in the bank. So he spent the rest, 35 years of his life doing that. And I think there was lots of factors that inhibited his footballing progression, but it was a different era.
Yeah.
And so I've got these romantic memories of Dad playing footy and carried them through to thinking he could have probably applied himself pretty well. But the fact is, no, I'm probably, as far as I know, the only one that sort of did anything of vague note in the sporting sphere. But I was a bit of an anomaly too, because although I had tall brothers, I was exceptionally tall, 6'9", and blessed, had nothing to do with me, of course, but blessed with a high level of athleticism when I was a kid. So I was the quickest, I was the tallest, and with that came enormous, you don't understand as a kid, but enormous sort of implied pressure and expectation. My first memory of competing in something outside of my family backyard was a Christmas party. I think it was a Mason's Christmas party. My grandfather was one. And great Christmas parties every year. And I went to line up in the under-7s race because I was 6 years old. But I was taller than most 9-year-olds at the time, So I got to line up, and this guy, this is how I remember it, so at six, he said, "How old are you?" And I said, "I'm 6". And he goes, "No, you're not." Right, and I go, "Yes, I am." And he goes, "If you think you're 6, you can start back there." And he started me 10 metres, probably 5. Yeah. I'll give you 5 metres behind everyone else. And I just really wanted that pack of fruit tingles, which was the winner's prize. I just had this indelible mark in my brain this moment in time because it kind of reflected a lot of other incidences, you know, incidents throughout the rest of my life. So I started 5 metres back. I took the penalty and I won the race. So I got my fruit tingles. He told me I didn't belong there, that I should be in the under nines or under tens. So that was my first exposure to prejudice against
size and height.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. Like, do you think that was a recurring theme right throughout the course of your life?
Yeah. No doubt. Oh, but that's not. I'm not affected by it.
No.
It's just something you actually learn to live with.
Yeah.
You know, because I was blessed with some athleticism. I was quick. I was winning all my races at Little Athletics, and there were times where parents would, I'm not half baking it, they'd literally chase me back to the tent where the school tent was, and question my validity in that race. You know,
yeah,
so
right.
It happened all the time.
Yeah.
Not to exaggerate it, but, you know, a number of times. So it became more of a normal part of my life, and that's why I was quite sheepish when I get to the Essendon footy club as a 15, 16-year-old. I was actually trying to pull myself out back to assimilate, so I didn't actually have that pressure. Always trying to check myself, so I didn't dominate. It was easier for me.
Yeah.
You don't have that sort of support in that era. To try and work through how to best handle that. But, I was blessed. Great family, loving family. I love my sport. Passion, that's an obvious statement, isn't it? But
who'd you bury for as a kid?
Mad Hawthorn.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dad was Hawthorn, so it made sense.
Yeah. And who did you idolise as a kid?
Had Hutto's number on my back,
Peter Hudson?
Yeah, Peter Hudson's number on my back. So the 26 became a big part of my life and emulating him. But I loved also, because I played in the ruck in junior footy predominantly moving forward, I idolised Len Thompson and Peter Moore, these sort of guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, the 70s era of Hawthorn for me has a lot of great memories. You know, the grand final. I never went to a league game before I played reserves footy at Essendon.
You didn't go to a game?
No, I'd never seen a league game before.
Only on the TV, obviously.
That's correct, yeah. So not live. I'd been to a state game at Waverley Park once, Victoria, for something. A friend of mine, his name was Peter Banfield. We grew up together. Yeah. He played Essendon and Brisbane. His dad was an editor at the Herald Sun at the time.
Okay.
So he took me to that one. So I didn't have a lot of exposure.
Yeah. But did you want to play for Hawthorn then as a kid?
Yeah. But having said that, as you recall, it was all zones. So even living locally in Ringwood, we were zoned to Essendon, which was great. So the conflict was I barracked for Hawthorn but went to bed at night dreaming of playing for Essendon one day. So it was just
At what age did you think that dream was going to become a reality?
What age? I was probably always a pretty misguided young man, but I thought
if you're big for your age and you're dominating footy and all that sort of stuff, I mean, I would think it would be reasonably early in your career you'd be thinking, and people would be saying to you, oh, you'll go on and play.
Yeah, it was happening. AFL. There was a carnival, our school, our ladies' primary I went to in Ringwood, we used to do an annual carnival with a South Australian school, and I was over there playing this carnival. We used to play about 3 games in a week, and I just sort of had this clean sweep of the 3 games and played really well, and I just felt that was a time in very early where I kind of thought, you know, that I have something that I would like to, better and improve on. So, and then I was 14, a quick anecdote. I just moved into Warrenwood, which is a neighbouring suburb of Ringwood, but it was actually Croydon Shire, and Croydon was Carlton zone.
Oh, okay.
So just a quick story, played a game, played pretty well. Peter Banfield and I were in the same side, Gary O'Donnell, these sorts of guys. We had a pretty good side. The scout, Gary Lewis, who was the scout for Essendon at the time, in one of his more sober moments, came onto the field. And I love Gary.
We're not defaming him.
Yeah. No, not really. He was a great man. And he's very kind and very generous to us boys. He came out with a bag with all the goodies. And I must admit, a couple of us were licking our chops thinking, you know, we're going to get a tally or something. So he gave the bag to someone he introduced as someone who's going to be an Essendon player one day. He feels that he's got all the talent and he played really well today and he awarded it to Peter Banfield, right, which is fine.
Yeah.
No qualms with that. But he had a pair of socks left and he said, another lad who I think has got a big future too, but unfortunately he's not an Essendon player anymore, a pair of socks for Paul, right? So I went over to Gary. I don't know where this came from because I'm not really.
How old are you now?
14.
14, okay.
I don't know where this came from. I went over to Gary in the car park later because, I've had 4 or 5 years of thinking Essendon. And I said, could you check that for me? Because my this is not my words at the time. Yeah. I'm just a stumbling 14-year-old. I said, my understanding is that I think I might be Essendon for a couple of years until the transition. And he goes, look, my understanding is you're Carlton, but right. I'll look into it.
Yeah.
Anyway, 3 days later, he came back, came to the milk bar that my mum and dad owned, and with a, what I think it was a Form 4 back then, I signed my first contract at 14 and got my bag and my jumper after all,
Is that right?
So I don't know if I saved myself from going to Carlton or...
So what would have been the qualification period, do you know?
It was 3 years.
It was 3 years. So yeah. You had to move into a particular zone for 3 years.
Correct. And I don't know why Gary... that's my recollection. Gary might have a totally different story on the angle to it, but that was my recollection of it. It's pretty much in that in that sphere, if you like. Yeah.
Can you remember... Because it wasn't drafting in your day, was it?
No, it was all zoning.
All zoning. So can you remember the first official approach to go to Essendon?
That was it.
That was it. So the club just kept in contact with you, did
they? Then I got a letter to join pre-season at the next summer.
Year.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And look, at that time, I was 15, I'm 6 foot seven.
Yeah.
And
how much would you have weighed at that time?
28 kilos. It wasn't much to it. I was probably in the 80s, I was a skinny lad.
Yeah, skinny, yeah.
But it was an important decision at that stage because I'm 15 at that height. I wasn't getting much competition in the under-15s. I could have had another year in that 15-16 bracket, or I could have gone into senior footy at North Ringwood. When I say could have, these are the options. VFA, my brother had connections at Paran and Marsden College. One of the teachers at Norwood Secondary College was a Marsden coach or administrator. And then there was Essendon under-19. So I had a training run at all of those. North Ringwood, I went down to Marsden and went down to Paran under Mick Irwin.
Yep.
I really enjoyed that experience. But I was young and Dad was just letting me make my own decision on this one. I just felt at the time the under-19s in the system would have been better for me, not such a quantum leap because I was pretty raw.
Yeah.
So I went to Essendon summer of 19, Sheeds' first year, 81.
Yeah.
And had that summer, had my first interaction with a guy who looked like a monster to me. We'd finished near the rear of the time trial around Cross Keys. And it was he had a beard and he just looked like 15-year-old, looked late 20s, looked more towards the end than the start. And he was huge. And he sat down next to me and asked me how tall I was, where I was from, what position I played. And I gave him all the information. He said, you know what, it's really not that important to be able to mark as a ruckman or kick the ball. He said, it's all about your body work and tap work. He said, focus on that. And I remember leaving that conversation because I'd idolised Len Thompson and Peter Moore, so I wanted to be that running, bouncing ruckman. And I thought one of us isn't going to make it, because that's not my philosophy. And it was Justin Madden. So,
Justin?
Yeah. He went on to play 330-odd games doing it his way, yeah.
So that early that first year then, you played under-19s, did you? Yeah. And reserve grade football?
No, I played the full year in the under-19s. Fortunately for me, that year was the first year they allowed under-19s players to play Teal Cup.
Yep.
So I had that wonderful experience that year. Yep. In front of – they didn't come to watch us, of course, but we played the final against South Australia in front of that 95,000 crowd at Waverley.
Who was in your Teal Cup side?
I had some really top players from Dermot Britton to Andrew Buse to Tim Darcy. We had some wonderful – wonderful footballers, in retrospect. The Adelaide side consisted of Tony Hall, Greg Anderson, McIntosh, these sorts of boys. So, and we came from 6 goals down at halftime to win that game. Wonderful memory as a kid. Then I played the next year in Teal Cup as well at 17 and reserves footy for Essendon all that year.
Sheeds have anything to do with you then?
Not much. No,
can you remember the first time he came up and started talking to you?
No, I can't remember the first time. But I was mesmerised by him.
Yeah.
Totally.
Well, he had that aura about him, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. And not in a healthy way, I think, in retrospect. I kind of was in awe of him.
Yeah.
And maybe there was an element of being in fear of a guy too because he was a pretty omnipresent sort of person.
Well, when he was in the early days of his coaching, he was a fearsome character.
He was brutal.
Yeah, He was brutal. He was fearsome.
So you were so watchful. I'm not sure what you recall, but I was so impressionable. I was just watchful of everything I did.
Yeah.
But there was people at the footy club in those days. And interestingly, the two guys that I remember taking me under the wing the most, I would never have picked, and even in retrospect, I don't know why, but Ron Andrews and Phil Carman really looked after me. It might have been only little things, but I remember that, walking onto the training track and Phil putting his arm around me and going, it could be a big night, stick with me, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
All meant a lot to a young bloke, as it still does to young players coming into the system.
Yeah.
But he didn't have a huge presence, but I remember in 82, 83, I was still a skinny, and I'd come run up in the Essendon reserves best and fairest to Roy Ramsey.
Yeah.
and played a couple of years at Teal Cup and stuff, and she's wanted me to build a body. So it was, he said, you're not coming out of the gym till you love it. And that's my first real interaction with Kevin that I can really recall, that he was threatening me that you're not going home to Ringwood, you're not getting the taxi, you'll stay in the gym for an hour before you join the track. In those days, I was joining the track with Fred Lehman, their weights coach. Yeah. I couldn't lift my arms above my head.
Yeah.
But I learned to love the gym. I bought one only 18 months later after my knee injury. So he had a huge influence on my life, huge, as he did on a lot of blokes back then. But, you know, I had him from 15 to 31 and then again at 37. He's had a big presence. I'm not sure I really understand who he is or I know what he stands for. I really respect so much about him. And he was like a second father figure in a lot of ways. But, the relationship it's not exactly warm and fuzzy. It's warmish. It's warm in terms of what we've been through together. Yeah. You know what I mean? I'm not sure I'm explaining this well.
No, I think that's
that, he actually had
that's
this,
understandable. Yeah.
Had that great ability to separate, didn't he?
No. And so what do you recall about your first game? Because we'll get onto sheets a little bit more in detail later.
First game, great memory, Sydney, 1983. Bombers' first game, Bomber Thompson as well. So it was a bit of a... we were in awe of our teammates. I remember just, you know, without embarrassing you, but, you know, I remember going on a training camp as a 16, 17-year-old and you joined us.
That's right.
Don McKenzie drove the bus down and I'm not sure you were on the bus at all. But
and you sat on the back of the tailgate and smashed it in half, you blokes.
Is that right?
Yeah, I wouldn't have done that. One of you offered to pay any money either, but that doesn't matter.
I think you were only about 19 or 20 at the time and we were only 16, 17.
Yeah, no, you're a bit younger.
But you were, I was in awe of all you guys.
So you flight to Sydney to play that game?
Sydney, a guy named Darren Williams was to pick me up. As you can appreciate, I'd played. Now, once I found out I was in the side, I'm playing that game over and over in my head 2 days out.
Yeah.
Daisy picks me up. Dad said, you're going straight to the airport. In those days, there was no Eastern Freeway all the way at East Link. It was end of Bournemouth. The reason I mentioned that... and I think we played on the same day as we travelled up in Sydney. So it was a time schedule. Timelines were pretty tight. It was early and we'd pick up Vander on the way. I said to Dad, yeah, we're picking up Vander. He goes, oh, okay. Because Dad played against Vander at Ringwood. he was a bit worried about that. Anyway, I'll shorten this little yarn because we did get to Vander's place. We tooted the horn on the street. Daisy had his 260Z, you know, the little orange thing he used to drive.
Yeah.
My knees were up on the dashboard. It was a bit comical, but no response to the tooting two or three times. Daisy said, we better go get him. Daisy's a pretty laconic sort of bloke, so he's laid back and I'm a bit antsy because I want to get to the airport and get there, don't want to stuff up. The door was slightly ajar. It was pretty obvious there'd been a card night or something the night before. There was cards on the ground. There were chip packets and stubbies and stuff. And this is totally sort of 180 degrees from where I was in my first game of league footy. So it smelled a bit too, you know, smoke and stuff. Then I heard the shower running. Daisy said, that's Vander in the shower. Just let him know we're here. So I went in there and to my pleasant surprise, it wasn't Vander in the shower. So I spent a few seconds just gathering myself. And it was Vander. Vander was,
it was his brother,
in the vicinity. Yeah. So I said, Vander, we're here. He told me to leave the room quickly, which I did. And he came out moments later. He grabbed a few snacks from the fridge, which weren't entirely healthy snacks.
No.
But it was good to fill a hole. And we got in the car and we got to the ground.
Eat cigarettes as well?
I can't remember the fags. But I do remember really enjoying that drive to the airport. Vander and Daisy were two interesting blokes together, and particularly before a game. It really switched me off. So, we went to Sydney. We lost the game. And my first kick was left foot out in the full in the tight boundary line. But I was so thrilled to get that first touch. And then I kicked a couple late in the game and I think we lost first round 83. And I played 9 games that year.
Did you get a game the next week?
Yeah, I played the first 2 games. The next week was against the guy, and I mean this with full sincerity, it was the only guy I felt fully actually threatened and intimidated by my whole career. I wasn't a combative footballer, as you know, but I'd never really felt overwhelmed by any opponent. Yeah. It was just they played a different way to me. But this guy was, I was actually scared of Jeff Giroux. Had a reputation.
Yeah.
And he came down to play.
Good reason for that too.
He came down to play on me, Tim, and he's just into me straight away. It's my second game and he had every right to be, and it kind of shapes you for when you're a senior player and you're introducing a younger player into the
Was this opposition. At Moorabbin or Windy Hill?
Windy Hill.
Yeah.
So I had this frightening thought that if I don't kick some early goals, then I'm just going to have to run as much as I can today just to avoid this bloke. And he was threatening a lot of stuff, death and maiming and not just to me but my family. And I was very impressionable. Anyway, I did get a couple of early goals, really early, first 2 or 3 minutes, and I remember the runner coming out and taking him off me.
Yeah.
And he was actually literally, he was still 40, 50 metres away. He was still turning around saying he'll be back and he's going to kill me. I'm not going to walk off the ground. And it was, it's actually quite humorous looking back. And I've met Jeff since and he's such a lovely man.
Yeah, yeah.
But on the field, he was a different cup of tea altogether. So I actually didn't do much after that in that game. And she's brought me in and out. I spent a lot of time on the pine that year.
Yeah.
But my favourite game that year was replacing Ronnie at three-quarter time against Hawthorn at Princess Park and getting cleaned up by Dipper. This is my first game against Hawthorn, and some of my heroes are playing.
Yeah.
It's that moment as a young footballer when you play against your heroes. Yeah. It's really special.
Yeah.
But Dipper just cleaned me up down the middle after I took a chest mark. I was just, switched off and he still laughs about it.
So that's 83.
That's 83. And I kicked six in the last three quarters and that was the day I felt I could actually play forward.
Yeah.
I didn't know I could.
So you're still thinking you're a ruckman at this point?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But Sheeds was always, he was starting to get into me, but in a positive way, that he thought I could be a forward.
Yeah.
But there wasn't really anyone had blazed the pathway for really tall full forwards at the time.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to cut my own, my own storyline, if you like. So that was a turning point for me.
So you get through 83. Yeah. 83, we play off in the grand final. You played in the reserve grand final?
Yeah, I did, and we won.
And you won. And what do you remember about the infamous speech that night?
Well, I remember a quick backstory is Kevin Morris was a coach in 1983. Yeah. Halfway through the year, he came back to play, and he played Ruck Rover to me all year. Anything I did beyond 83 in terms of transitioning to 84, I relate back to Kevin's input. Yep. He just protected me. I had some pretty angry teammates. And back then the reserves were full of guys who were on the fringe or too old.
That's right.
So it was packed of those, a smattering of young blokes. Very different dynamic to what it is now. So Kevin played alongside me that as a 17-year-old. That was just a huge thing. We won the game. Ronnie Andrews had been dropped to the reserves. Frank Donnell, I think, also missed out that year.
What do you remember about Ronnie's demeanour in the grand final? Because that was a big decision from the club at that time because he was one of the most revered figures with fans and players alike. It was a huge decision for Kevin at that time not to play him in the grand final. A lot of people still think to this day it was an error because Ron would have done or he would have taken out anyone they needed to take out that day.
I just remember we had him around the back line, the back half, full back, centre half back, and we had a guy named Harry O'Callaghan down at full forward.
Yeah, Dirty Harry.
Now, I'm not sure if Harry's his first name, to be honest. I never actually found out. But you've got these two beasts at either end in the reserves. The presence of Ronnie Andrews in the reserves that day, you just walked taller. And there's no left or right with Ron. That day he was just straight ahead and he was mowing blokes down. And we could only smile about it because I just felt so much braver. When someone like Ron Andrews in your team. In the night you referred to, we sat together as a reserves team.
Celebrating.
We won.
Yeah.
And we didn't want to deny ourselves a good night, but I'm just being led along because I'm 17. So, it's really, I'm not a troublemaker. We had guys like Merv Harmison, Gary Sheldon and Ron and Frank, all these real big personalities in that side. And, of course, Kevin made his speech about not accepting second best and this is not a club he wants to drive forward and that man. So, as I record, anyone who's caught smiling or laughing tonight really doesn't have a place in this footy club. Is that how you recall it, basically?
Well, I wasn't there either, but that's...
Okay, you were there. Yeah. So we were at the reserves table and I'm sitting three down from Ron and he said something quite a little bit disparaging under his bat sheets because he'd been dropped and no effing idea or whatever that sort of thing is. I can't quite recall, but he and a couple other boys couldn't help but have a chuckle at that comment, And it was just instinctive and we're half cut anyway because we've been drinking since, the opening siren of the senior game. And, of course, Ron was at Collingwood the next year and that made a huge impression on me because whether it was going to happen regardless, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I remember just, again, being 17, 18, that she'd said that if anyone laughed, they're out.
Mm.
And it scarred me forever because Ron was out. Yeah.
And you thought he meant it.
Well, I thought, that's a pretty credible thing to do. I mean, in future, and you get older and that all sort of, dilutes itself. But in that sort of 18 to 23, 24 age group, if she'd said something, it was going to happen as a consequence of doing something, then I had no doubt that he meant it. So
well,
it's not a bad position for a coach to be in.
Tell us about 84 then. What changed for you over the course of that summer? Anything?
Yeah, look, I had a belting. I remember I had a belting summer training.
Yeah.
I just remember I just was coming to my own physically. I was enjoying the gym. Yep.
Had you just decided as a player, okay, I'm going to make it?
Something else happened, yeah. Tim, you know, pre-Christmas. Just post-Christmas 84, sorry. It was a very sad story, which I won't dwell on, but a guy that I was catching a taxi to and from training with, the son of Bob Syme.
Yes.
Gary.
Oh, yes.
And, tragically he took his own life over that period. And we were friendly.
So you were pretty close?
Well, I was close to a point of spending a lot of time with him in that commuting sense and training, and we spent a lot of time together. And it was my first exposure to that. So questioning how you don't see that coming was really tough. And to hear the subsequent stories about how he might have, you know, done some planning around that was really disturbing. But I dedicated everything I did to Gary. And this is actually probably the first time I've told this story. For whatever reason, it's a very personal thing. Everything I did from that point was in training was he couldn't be there. For whatever reason, you know, he lost that opportunity. And I either highlighted one or two things, that I've got something that I can't waste, you know, an opportunity, and that I'll do this for Gary. This is something I think I can, you know, show respect to him for. And so I turned the volume up on everything and I just got really – I just had this overwhelming sense of I want to take this on. I just want to really take every opportunity, and I think I got a bit more, for want of a better word, ruthless about the way – and I'm only 19, whatever that means.
Yeah.
But, when I took the field against St Kilda in round 1, 1984, I had no idea it was coming, and nor was I ready for it.
Yeah. Can I just go back a
please,
little bit?
Yeah.
And that is, you've been a ruckman to this point. So when was the decision made to be a forward?
Sheed had played me a bit forward in the summer in those practice matches. I hadn't done anything really to warrant full forward.
Yeah.
But again, I may be wrong in the detail, but I think one of my key forward teammates was out for the first round of 1983, and it could well have been Roger through suspension. And the way she's put it to me, my selection was based on the fact that opportunity presented itself, and I'll play out of the goal square. Yeah. I remember Rudy Webster coming up to me before that game at St Kilda, round one, who was our esteemed sports psychologist, and he said, "How many goals in his West Indian? How many goals you want to kick today?" And I said, "Remember saying 8? Yeah. It's a ridiculous number to pull out of my hat." And he goes, "Oh, no." He said, "Just go ahead and play the ones and the twos. You know, don't you play your shots later." I kicked 5 in the first half. He came in at halftime. He said, "How many have you got?" And I said, "I got 5." He goes, "Yeah." He said, "Play your shots now. Just go ahead and play your shots." And I remember that play your shots comment was something that. Again, I was just a sponge for bullshit at the time, I think, and I thought I loved that play. So I played my shots and
how many did you kick?
I kicked 7 that day, and so did Plugger at the other end. And then the next 3 weeks, next actually 2 or 3 months were just were ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, for me as a young man.
When you say ridiculous, what do you mean?
Well, I enjoyed the ride. I'm not going to deny that. Yeah. But
that's okay.
I wasn't ready.
How many goals did you kick in the second week?
7 and then 8.
Yeah.
And then 5.
To reflect on this period, it was like, John Coleman had been sort of those revered figure at the Essendon Football Club and still is to this day, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like you talk about, you know, Dickie Reynolds and you talk about Hurdy and you talk about Matt, but it's still really Coleman if you're talking to
some
people. But you were being likened to Coleman at this particular time, weren't you? I mean, it's pretty heady stuff for a young guy.
It is. I didn't live in Essendon, so I didn't have to live with the the barrage yet. I'd get to go home to Ringwood, but I could no longer go down the shopping centre. I could go to a milk bar, and because I'm now 6'9" and
you can't hide.
And that was a real emotional transition I had to make. Yeah, it was, but you know, the era of getting all that publicity in front pages, I won't deny an element of enjoying it because it was a novelty.
Yeah.
But I have to be brutally honest and say I didn't enjoy going to training or going to games anymore.
What was it?
Well, because I was copying it from teammates a lot.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that era it was normal. Yeah.
That ribbing would.
Oh, yeah.
But it affected you in a negative way.
Well, ribbing / bullying.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, you think it was bullying as well, do you?
Well, I don't know what else you could call it.
Yeah.
You know,
give me an example of what you're talking about, though.
Oh, just the dynamic in that.
I mean, I was there, but I'm not sort of familiar with what happened to
you. Yeah. Oh, no. Well, you just I think the assumption from teammates, particularly older ones and maybe more disgruntled ones, is that you might be getting ahead of yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, or that you're getting full of yourself or that, you know, you believe the papers and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas I was really at the heart of it, at the core of it, I was just a young guy trying to consolidate my place in the team. And I didn't see myself as anything else.
No.
So how I viewed myself as opposed to how other people were viewing me at the time and teammates, there was quite a disconnect, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, I just didn't enjoy going on the track, you know, because the cameras were there and, you know, the boys were too ready to say, you know, you invited all the cameras. And I know it's all gentle and harmless, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I just was...
But you were too young probably to accept it as just being...
And there was no one
fun
external.
Fun banter, yeah.
Correct. Well, that's
and there's always that element.
No, that's fun banter.
Yeah, okay. But
that's fun.
Yeah, but if there's always that element within a footy club, if somebody's up here... You had to pull them down. That was sort of the way that it operated. Yeah,
yeah, but probably a bit prematurely because
you have to actually
establish whether that person is up there.
Yeah,
And I totally get the whole grounding process of teammates if they're getting a bit.
Yeah,
but it was just a heady time. I mean, I think it was, in fairness to all the people around me too, it was probably new for a lot of. Yeah. I mean, you were a superstar and you had a lot of publicity, but I was a novelty value. I was a real novelty thing because of my height and because of so and it was. And we were a good side going places. Yeah. So there's a lot of attention on the club. So I get it. And it was probably an interesting period for some of my teammates to get their head around too. It was all happening so fast. But it was just such a boom sort of environment for me.
Yeah.
But I, as I said, I come back to what I said at the start, largely enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was a novelty. Yeah. And you go from being at the back of queues at pubs and stuff to the front with drink cards and girls starting to talk to you, mate. It was actually, you know, it was a pretty cool time.
Yeah.
So I don't regret it.
How do you reckon you handled it then, that part?
I was immature.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was a non-drinker at the time.
As we all are at 19. Yeah.
So how do I reckon I handle it? I'd like to think I handled it as well as I could.
Yeah.
But I reckon I probably butchered it maybe. You know, because, you know, it's easy to lose focus and then you get distracted about what do people think of me?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and what do my teammates think of me? And I just didn't – I hadn't established enough rapport with enough teammates, particularly senior ones, to have that – shoulder to lean on, someone I can talk to, and actually someone even to guide me through that, and have a crack back at blokes if they were. Yeah. I didn't have that protection.
Do you think Sheeds understood what you were going through?
Nah, no. Sheeds was. I don't think so.
No.
He probably did his best to water it down at the time, but it was you're getting articles written on you about being the potentially the first $1 million footballer and stuff in 1984 when you're getting paid $4,000 a year. You know, so, and then you're going through that doesn't, but it was also an early lesson in understanding that what people read, they're going to largely believe. So now you're expected to be have the money to pay for stuff for people and all that sort of stuff. Why isn't it your shout? You're a tight ass. You know, well, I don't have any money.
can you imagine, though, if that had happened today? Like, because the game is so much bigger than what it was back in 84. Like, it's sort of – and what you went through back in 84 was extraordinary for that time. But if it was happening today, like, it would just be off the charts.
Well, I don't know. Today is just phenomenal. The social media, the scrutiny.
All of that. Yeah,
It's phenomenal. But
okay, come on, just before we go further.
Sure.
Just I want to – because 84 – you're at, you know, the peak of your powers, everything's great.
Yeah.
And then the knee.
Life-changing moment, without boring
In a second, yeah.
In a second. I was actually in the ruck when it happened.
Yeah.
I'd taken the ball out of the ruck. I was rucking again. I'm still idolising opponents. Yeah. I'm rucking against David Cloke, you know. Yeah.
At Victoria Park.
And the message came from the runner, Fish, we need you to change the game. You know, we need you to have an impact.
Yeah.
It was a message from the runner, go in the ruck. So Simon went forward. And I would just love that moment. Those 10 minutes before my knee were the most enjoyable 10 minutes of that year at that time almost, because I was showing people I could actually ruck.
Ruck as well,
and play around the ground. So, yeah, you're a young bloke. So, I took it out of the ruck and Jeff Raines came inside. Yeah, he wasn't trying to inflict that sort of damage. I think he was generally trying to smother the footy. So my leg snapped around him. I had strong joints, you know, but so it was a pretty – it was a very clean snap on the ACL. But, you know, lying on the ground in Victoria Park was different perspective. My world
changed. Did you know straight away?
Yeah, I knew straight away. Well, I didn't know what an ACL felt like.
No.
But I had no control of my knee.
Yeah.
So it was bent.
And you knew it was serious.
I couldn't catch it falling left or right. Yeah, I knew it was serious. Getting carried off on the stretcher was a novelty because, and I often, joke about it, but the Collingwood crowd on the wing would, knew my mother way too intimately. I said to Mum, "Where there's smoke, there's fire."
Yeah,
it worries me. Got around to the race, and in fact, the Collingwood supporters It was another really tangible lesson for me as a young footballer, because I got spat on by Collingwood supporters on the stretcher, but I actually really quickly understood they weren't spitting on me, the brother, son, friend. They were spitting on the jumper.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope they were at least. Yeah, yeah. But I took it that way. So it was a good lesson to have. But my life changed really quickly on so many fronts. Because I didn't trust footy anymore.
Yeah.
And even to be a little bit more profound about it is that I couldn't think of – I wasn't introduced to anyone who really come back successfully from a knee reconstruction at the time. And you didn't – you followed only a year or two later.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, Neil Danner was having his struggles.
Yeah.
And Butch Edwards came back, but he didn't have a lengthy career after he came back. So, you know, to be honest, and I'm asking you, I apologise, I'm asking a question of myself here, but I do get asked, what are you, and you probably do, what are you most proud of with your footy career? And there's no doubt your premierships and stuff, but playing, to me, playing 300 games after my Rico was the thing I'm most proud of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it was still experimental in those days.
Very much. They experimented on me. I mean, I was a bit of a guinea pig because they introduced some fibre cord called Dacron or something from the States. They trialled it in the United States in NFL. So John Bartlett put two anterior cruciates together for me. I remember him at the end of my bed saying, you have to get hit by a truck to do that again.
Yeah.
But he said the price I'm making you pay is it's going to take a couple of years for you to straighten that leg because your height, mechanics. Yeah. So they did a really tight injury and that then created a lot of ripple effect injuries for the next 5 years, hamstrings, calves, that sort of stuff, because the whole mechanics of my body were thrown out a bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I didn't trust footy. I bought my first business at 19. I was married at 21, kids at 22. I wasn't going out deliberately to do these things, but football was no longer the centre of my universe.
Yeah, yeah. It all changed for you. At that time.
Absolutely.
But you also still obviously focused on coming back and playing because you got back in 85.
Yeah. More and more determined.
How difficult was it then? Because 84 was the first premiership for that group of Essendon players and you're on the sidelines and you know you would have been in that team, front and centre at full forward in the ruck because of what you'd already done earlier. Was that difficult emotionally to sort of...
Well, you're 19, you think you're as good as we were, you think there's going to be another one, but... Yeah, I was terribly envious that day. Yeah, and it wasn't I felt great for all my teammates, particularly, Alan Izzard and Bomber and Mark Harvey, these sorts of guys who I'd played, a fair chunk of footy with leading up to that. But, my great memory is standing at the end of the race, waiting for you guys to come back in off the field with your medals and the trophy, and Terry asked me to come out and hold the trophy. It was just a great gesture on his behalf.
Yeah.
I felt a little bit involved, but, you're never going to be in that premiership shot. No. So you're not a premiership player, and you get that at that point. But it creates a determination, and I channeled that pretty well. But I was drinking heavily at the time and went on the footy trip to the US. You may vaguely remember the big one through San Francisco and New Orleans and New York. It was just – I know I'd never travelled. And I got back from that, and I wasn't in great condition, wasn't happy with myself. I'd probably cracked the sads because I didn't play in a premiership and knees still sore and bent. But something triggered, I can't remember what, but I really knuckled down pretty hard. And to fast forward, I came back from – I actually, when the fixtures came out late 84 for next year, I circled the game I wanted to come back in the reserves, and then rather boldly I circled the next week, which was a senior game. And as fate would have it, that's exactly how it played out.
Yeah.
So I had my goal. I was really focused on it. It happened. I only came back into that first game straight after reserves. I kicked 10 in the reserves at Waverley.
Yeah.
But arguably the worst thing that ever happened to me because
his back
started.
Yeah.
And then Sheeds brought me in that week. And again, I'm too young. He says, are you ready to play this week? Because Roger was out again for some reason, or it was Terry. And I said, yeah, absolutely. You know, I should have said no.
Yeah.
Physically, emotionally, I wasn't ready at all. Yeah. But so I got played at Victoria Park, as fate would have it. And, I had a lot of scar tissue on my knee. It was still bent. I wasn't moving that well. A great guy named, was it Worthington?
Yeah, fullback. Kevin Worthington.
Yeah, nice guy. He was all over me, which is good. And so I spent a lot of time in the reserves after that.
Yeah.
So indulge me. It's round 20.
Yeah.
And I'm in the reserves. I'm getting one kick, mate.
Yeah.
I can't find the footy.
And the finals are just around the corner. Yeah. Essendon are on top of the ladder.
Yeah, I've told this story a number of times now, and I'd given up, flat out given up on it. And Sheeds came out to where I was. I owned a gym. Yeah. He came out and picked me up, and he said, let's go for a drive. And I'll take all the mayonnaise out of the story, which is really true. You know, the Red Saliga, Gels Park, sat outside a toilet block. He said, how you feeling? I said, I said exactly that. I'm not there. I can't get there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know why or how. But he said, look, I want to make a deal with you. Those are his words. He said, you're coming out the training and it's bad. You know, you've got to remember you're 6'9". The guys can see you dropped your shoulders, your head. You don't want to be there. I said, that's probably fair enough. Yeah, because you're just going to yourself, you know, a bit selfish about it all because you have given up, put the white flag up. And he said, if you come out to train, look like you want to be there, train the house down, I'll play you.
And Did you believe him?
Well, I was a bit taken aback by it.
Yeah.
I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, look, and I'll even play, if we make the grand final, I'll play you in that.
He said that?
I 100% said it.
Yeah.
I said, how can you do that? And I remember him saying, he said, I'm the coach, I can do what I want. Right. And I got in the car back
with
him.
This is round 20?
Round 20, can't get the smile off my face. Yeah. I can't get a kick in the twos, mate. Yeah. I didn't even think about what anyone else would think. No one else was going to know. But I go to training that night and I know I'm, apart from the superstars, I'm the only bloke who knows he's got a game in the grand final, if we make it, right? Such a huge weight off my shoulders. Very insightful on Kevin's behalf. He was pretty good at this.
Yeah.
So I trained the house down. It was by my standards, which was pretty mediocre anyway. I trained the house down. I got it that week in the twos at Windy Hill and kicked 11 out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's all mental.
Yeah.
Kicked 7 in the seniors. He put me in the seniors for the last round, 1984, 5, and kicked 7 against Sydney up in Sydney. And then I just got my chance in the grand final, which we won convincingly. And I'd like to think I played my part.
Elshaw with a long shot. Salmon got the sit easily over O'Halloran. That had his name on it. Decides to play on. He's gone for a hand pass. Harvey, goal number 2. Essendon, brilliant.
Boundary throw in. Merritt's picked up by Izzard.
Salmon, be a dream come true, this fellow he's having today.
And Salmon calling for the lead. He's in front now. Can he mark it? He's got it. Well, he's the danger man. There's the kick on its way. Result, it's a goal. There it is. This one make the distance. Salmon's got a chance to mark it. He's grabbed it. Still not a bad effort. 6 goals in the grand final either. And we've got about 4 minutes to go. He could finish up with 7-2 on a bit of an angle. And there's no worries about that. That's goal number 6 to Salmon.
And I think that he was just using me as a cat amongst the pigeons.
Yeah. It's a touch of genius, though, in being able to recognise that, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So I never doubted him.
I always thought he had that as part of his coaching. Like I always thought that, I mean, I'm sure he misfired sometimes with the psychology of it all, but I reckon to a larger extent he got it right with that group, particularly that group of players at that time.
I think so. And I've held him in, you know, I've revered him ever at the time and ever since, but because he got me that grand final. He got me that premiership.
And we were loaded. Like we were loaded with tall players too, like –
Well, I've got some silly stories about that because he wanted me to learn off Roger and Vander and Terry and these sorts of guys. Yeah. And we had it was a pretty potent front half, if you like.
It was massive.
Harvey was floating and stuff. So there's some other anecdotes I won't bore you with about that. But it was it was a great time. It was an exciting time for the club. And then it got all disrupted in 86, 87 with various injuries and departures and other things. But I remember it really well enough to know that, you know, a few years later when you're leaving the club.
Yeah.
It was really important to never burn your bridges. I always valued the genius that getting me that premiership over anything else that was needed because I think he, to some degree, stuffed my career up in the early to mid-90s too in terms of not unleashing me when he could have. And there's a lot of reasons why he couldn't or didn't. You know, my body and I totally get that in team balance and bringing other blokes in and developing them. But I did know at 30 going 31 that it's either retire or for me or to take – one last shot at my title, and my title was to find out.
Yeah.
You know, because I was just envious at 31 of all the boys I played with that got to play their best position for a long time. So I wanted to have a crack at that.
So what did he hold you back? I mean, I've never really understood. I know there are other ruckmen there, I think probably in his own mind he's saying, okay, well, it's easier to find a ruckman than it is somebody that can be a key forward. Like, is that sort of how you thought he thought about it?
I didn't overanalyze it. I'm now late 20s. I think you expect a lot from me as a leader and someone that you know would take on the challenges that he presents. He always said to me that he didn't have many options out of the goal square. He was trying to develop Peter Somerville, Steve Alessio, and I understood that. And we got some great results, 1993. You know, and I accepted that. I must admit, for 10 years, I'm not sure how many players spend 10 years of their footy career. At least believing themselves that they're playing an apprenticeship role. And I had no real issue with that because Simon Madden was one of the all-time greats and I respected that. But you get to a point after 7 or 8 years where you think you can take the title.
Yeah.
Whether you can or can't,
yeah,
you want a shot. And I didn't really I'm really proud of what Simon and I did together.
Yeah.
If you look at if you were to look at the goals we kicked as a collective over that 10 years, you know, it's a pretty rare combination. I'm really happy with that. But there did come a time, and I don't know if Kevin would admit it or not, but I felt I was ready emotionally, physically, to lead the side from the centre and to drift forward.
Yeah.
But I couldn't get that dynamic shifted, and my body was failing me, Tim. So, and I had average years after 94. I had my Achilles reconstructed at the end of 94. My groin's done at the end of 95, and I'm 31. Really, there's a lot to suggest I'm done.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get it. I understand from
here. Can I take you back to 93 then? Because we sort of bypassed 93.
Yeah.
What do you remember? Well, you played in the 1990 losing grand final.
Yeah.
You talk about it is, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, the highest point you can have in your career is a winning grand final.
Yeah.
But the lowest point you can possibly have is a losing. That's how it felt for me too. Like in some ways, I don't think I've ever got over the 1990. I've got over it, but it's still. Haunt is probably a strong word to
it's
use,
away,
but
doesn't it?
I still think about that missed opportunity in 1990. Is that similar to how you think about that year? Or?
Yeah, it is. No question. But I used 1990 in such a positive way for the next 10 years of my footy career. I didn't know I had 10 years left.
Yeah, yeah.
But because I remember starting okay that game, but
you kicked the first goal of the game, didn't you? In 1990, the grand final?
I could well have, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you did.
I had four shots in the first quarter.
Yeah.
I should have kicked four in the first. I'm not saying that.
No. But I think you actually came out, took the first mark of the game, went back and kicked the goal.
I was up and about.
Yeah, you look like you're on fire.
I wanted to take the game apart. But when the Collingwood started to take the game away from us after quarter time, and there's that inner ruckman in me saying, Simon, let me go, let me have a crack. Yeah. But there was no changing. I didn't get a shot in the ruck all day.
All day?
No. Because I think what I did in the first quarter, had she's maybe thinking that, you know, if the delivery starts to come again or the flow starts to happen, then I might just. But no, and I feel, and this really eats at me, and I'm really angry with myself. I feel like I spectated that day.
Yeah,
it's
the ball wasn't getting down there a lot.
No, and when it was really scrappy, but that's okay. You have those days. But I'm taking full responsibility that I just felt like I didn't have the impact, and I didn't force myself on Simon because I was in awe of him. And I actually had a conversation with Sheeds after that year.
What I find extraordinary about this, though, and it's not something I've thought a lot about, but here you are telling me that on this particular day, a coach who was known for shuffling his team around extensively didn't actually make that move. On that particular day?
Yeah, but again, Simon and I should take responsibility for that. But I couldn't. Simon had a beautiful deafness about him on the footy field that.
He was supposed to change a bit more than what he did.
I don't know. Look, he called the shots.
Yeah.
I was still the junior, and which is fine, but I'm 25 or 6. Yeah, and I get that. But Simon, who no one loves Simon more than I do, I don't think, as a teammate and a person.
Yeah.
But I reckon I got that wrong on that day. Yeah. I could have maybe imposed myself more. And I just promised myself from that day forward, in terms of my playing and my leadership, whatever it was at the club, that I would not let that happen again. I would impose myself when the time came in terms of making changes. And Sheeds actually handed over control of ruck changes after that grand final to Simon and I on the ground.
Is that right?
Yeah, okay. He said, you guys call the shots.
Yeah.
Because largely he was still calling them from the box.
Yeah.
So I think that was a healthy shift outcome from the game. Yeah, so 1990 was painful. But I was doing a lot of handball shows at the time with Tony Shaw, and I saw him outside after the game and went over to him and congratulated him on his performance. And it was that moment where I also recognised the two sides of the coin, and I was happy for him in a really begrudging sort of way.
Yeah.
But that fire burnt really loud on two fronts: losing a premiership and wanting to get back and win another one. And personally, Simon also didn't play the first half in 1990.
No,
because his back, he was having a lot of trouble with it. And I was playing ruck, and this is what compounded the ruck issue on that day, grand final day, because I played ruck for the first half of 1990, and this sounds terribly self-indulgent, but as a player, you look for little areas of your pockets of your career where you can hang your hat.
Yeah.
And I remember after round 10 or 11 in 1990, I was leading the Brownlow and the best and fairest at the club, and I took that with me to Hawthorn.
Yeah.
So I can do this, if I'm given the responsibility, I know I can do it. And that was I used 1990 in a really constructive way moving forward.
Yeah.
But never begrudge Simon his greatness or
no, he was a great player. I think the point I was making,
my time was going to come.
Yeah, it was more about, you know, like Sheed's sort of, you know, from the coach's box thinking.
Yeah, interesting.
Here we should make more of a change here. We should sort of try and mix this up a bit. Because
you know what, Tim, if he showed me the tape.
He was never afraid to mix it up. Like, that's not something that he was ever concerned to do.
That's my recollection. You know, you might show me the tape of the 90 grand final. There might be little moments where I was in the ruck. I can't remember them.
Yeah.
To this day, I can't remember if I actually took a centre bounce that day.
Yeah. Now we're going to run out of time.
Yeah, sure.
If we don't. And I want to touch on 93 and your recollection of.
I'll keep it short.
Yeah, yeah, but no. It's been great, but
of course
we've got a time factor here that we have to adhere to. And that, you know, 93 to me was the most extraordinary year because of all this young, precocious talent.
Yeah.
But no one really knew how good they were because they're in their second year of football, and no one's really built a massive reputation in their second year of football. We all know now that they all went on to become very good, great players. Mm. You know, Dustin and James and Mercury and Nassiti, all those guys.
Yeah.
But what when you think about 93, what sort of thing comes to mind first?
I can tell you pretty succinctly, it was an exciting time, a scary time because you'd had 92 off.
Yeah.
And 92 also signaled the end of Terry and Simon's career.
Yeah.
So it was a real transition happening at the footy club. We're losing three. We'd lost one icon. We're losing another two. We'd finished 10th in 92.
Yeah.
Struggled our way through that year. Blooded a few youngsters. Didn't know them very well. I remember you weren't back at the club officially when this meeting happened, and myself, Bomber was captain and I was vice, and I think Mark Harvey was deputy, and Gary O'Donnell's the four of us were brought into the group.
Yeah.
So we're in this room with Sheets, and this is how I recall. And Sheets said, what do you want to get out of 1993? And we said, well, we're just unsure. He said, well, it's going to be a super challenging year. You know, it's your team now, basically. He said, do you know much about your young teammates? And all of us collectively said, not really. And we played with them and trained with them for a little while. But he said, look, we've got some super young talent coming through. So he said, don't be afraid to be brave.
Yeah.
Basically, with your goals and stuff. And none of us even thought about premierships. But he said, how do you want to manage them? And I think collectively we remembered our, particularly Bomber and Harves and I, remembered our early 80s experiences of a whole apprenticeship, you know, speak when you're spoken to. And we said we just wanted to give them their head, you know, encourage them, and we wanted to bring them in quicker, you know. That was, you know, fast-tracking the first era of fast-tracking young talent. We kind of wanted to and encourage their personality on the training track and field. So that was great. Then you came back, which, you know, initially I was not in favour of that idea, not that it was my decision of you coming back, because I thought, you know, the baton's been passed, you know.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, it was and I'm not just, you know, wanting to embarrass you, but it was a great thing to happen to this group, you know, you being in that mix, because you added so much off the field that I wasn't ready to provide, and maybe even Bomber wasn't. But so it was a masterstroke, and your contribution was enormous. I know you take the mickey out of yourself for the one kick in the ground. That's irrelevant, some of the stuff you did that year. But it was a perfect mix, perfect storm. And I think, you know, coming into round six in 93, we were, I think, one win, one draw and three losses, something like that.
Yeah.
And that was that Geelong-Essendon game at the MCG where I did well and Gary Ablett did well. And we got a lot of belief from
that
game.
Don't gloss over that, though, because Ablett kicks 14 at one end and you kick 11 at the other end.
I got 10 at the other end.
Sorry, 10. Yeah.
And the two key forwards, each with six goals. Salmon going for his sixth. Salmon has got his sixth.
Hills or Hurd, Ablett. Snap, number 10.
Ford looking for Salmon. He does well, does very well, does extremely well. Magnificent stuff by Salmon.
Pascott, long kick, Ablett. Good use of the body, great mark. Ablett for his 12th, the Cats need one. And he's kicked one.
And off the left foot. Well, this shot will put Geelong in front if he kicks accurately. And 13 goals to Ablett, Geelong lead.
An extraordinary day.
I was in the stands watching that day because I hadn't actually come back and started playing yet. And
it
was just the most extraordinary thing to see, sort of this domination of one player, one end of the ground, and the other. Because as soon as the ball went over halfway, immediately everyone started to think, you know, one end, where's Ablett?
Yeah.
And at the other end, where's Salmon?
Yeah, it was an amazing game to be part of. For me, I'm not sure if anyone's ever kicked 10 goals in a league game and felt so pedestrian.
Yeah.
Because watching Gary at the other end, it was showtime. He could do anything. I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
But it was I remember doing my hamstring in the halfway through the third quarter, and I came out at three quarter time, and Bruce Reed, the doctor, he checked it out. I had nothing in it. And he said, "Oh, that's it, mate. That's your day. And you're going to miss a couple with that." And I said, "Oh, yeah." I shrugged my shoulders, and she said, yelled out to me, he said, "How many you got?" And I knew well how many I had. I said, 9. And he said, "You want 10? I swear to God, this happened, mate. And I said, kind of sheepishly, yeah. And he goes, "You got 5 minutes." And I looked at Reedy, and Reedy said, "Sheeds, he's no good. He's done his hamstring." He said, "Let him go and have a crack for 5, something to that effect."
Yeah.
So I went out and I got this soft free kick in the goal square in 2 minutes into the last quarter. I got my 10th. So I had 10-6 and I took off, and Steve Alessio came on and kicked 3 in the last quarter for us. So the forwards had a day out that day. And to win that game, for me, but I missed a couple of games after that. I think the team got a lot of belief out of that day.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of snowballed as the year went on. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm not sure how much time we've got to left.
Can't be long.
To talk about sort of the Hawthorn days, but
okay.
I guess the departure from Essendon, was it a relief to get out of the club at that time?
Was it good word?
No, yeah, but yeah. was it sort of like a?
I was torn, mate.
Yeah, was it distressing?
Yeah, it was. I was so wedded to the Essendon Footy Club. Like you get there very young, and it's a huge part of my life, and I didn't know anything else. You kind of become brainwashed a little bit. But having said that, 1 year after winning that premiership, I went to Sheeds, and who had always said, and I think you'd recall him saying this, "You're not 100% committed to this club. You've got to tell me."
Yeah.
And as a vice captain at the time, I felt really obligated to go to him and say, "I don't think I can wear this jumper the same level of that you want, and that my teammates would expect of me."
Yeah.
Just trying to be really honest, and I got convinced that I should stay. I was in the middle of a 5-year contract. I've been the antichrist of 5-year long-term contracts ever since. I don't think they're good for club or player. Maybe different nowadays, of course. But I wasn't allowed to go at the end of 94. In 95, I struggled. I couldn't raise a knee because of my groins. And I battled with 12 games in 95, and no club had any reason to back me in. I don't know. Yeah. But I was very – at the end of 95, she's coming. We caught up at the Hilton, his office, and he's with Danny Corcoran.
Yeah.
And they both felt that, that my body was failing me, and I didn't see a lot of light at the end of the tunnel. So we agreed that I said I did want to have another shot at somewhere else, and they said, "We'll help you get to wherever you want to go."
Yeah.
So after 14 years at the club at that time, 15 years, it was pretty traumatic, you know.
So what did Hawthorn promise you on the other side?
Nothing. I remember sitting down with Ken Judge and Peter Swab at Judge's home. And they said, "You know, we've got a big job ahead of us." I'm pretty sure they're aware of the merger prospects the next year, but I wasn't told about them.
No.
The job they were referring to is 1995. Essendon, Hawthorn finished second bottom, and you know, Chris Langford was trying to play out of Sydney, and they're losing champions and stuff, and big transition going on, but I felt that I could play a role.
Yeah.
Back for Hawthorn as a kid.
Did they feel that they could get your body right as well? Or because
they were pretty sure. They said, they asked me how I felt about my body, and I said, "Look, I don't know if I can trust it, but I do know, and I can promise you that I won't leave a stone unturned to get it right."
So did you then have that same determination? You talk about sort of going into the 84 season. No, did you have that same?
You nailed it, mate.
Yeah.
You nailed it. I'd reckon there's only a handful of times in anyone's career where you plug into that level of determination and commitment and drive. And I became not so much a different person. I was able to reinvent myself at Hawthorn.
Yeah.
Because I was
– You had no baggage of
– No baggage. I'd walk into the Essendon Footy Club and there was an expectation on how I'd behave.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of smart aleck about it. It was a bit of playfulness and a bit of all that sort of stuff. And I could go to Hawthorn and I could knuckle down.
Yeah.
And I was still the same me, but I chose my battles, you know. And
yeah.
But a lovely little anecdote was my first week at Hawthorn. I'm working out in the gym doing, as I became renowned for, doing some extras, trying to get to know my new teammates. And One thing that struck me about the Hawthorn Footy Club in Glenfrey was the doors were always open. Yeah. Now, your recollection of Essendon might be different to mine, but the doors were always closed and yeah. no one was allowed in the gym at Essendon. And Kevin was always wary of who was in the rooms, you know?
Yeah.
Would that be fair enough?
Yeah, that'd be true.
Yeah. So I went to an environment which was open door, and this guy came off the street and he was in his Hawthorn beanie and the duffel coat and stuff. And he came in and he was I think the first guy I met was genuinely excited to see me, and he said, "Fish, you know, it's great to have you here." He's very inviting. I said, "Mate, should you be in here?" It really threw me off my game. Yeah. And he said, "Yeah, I come in all the time." And the boys, all the guys that I was training with said, "G'day to him." His name was Ralph or something. And I said, "Oh, I'm just worried that I might drop a weight and you hurt yourself." Yeah. But my last 15 years had been no one's allowed in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is not a place for spectators or fans. So I was concerned. I went up to John Hook, the footy manager, afterwards, and I said, "Hookie, we've got a problem." He goes, "What is it, Fish?" And I said, "We've got people walking off the street coming into the change rooms, mate." And he just looked at me, and Hookie was, you know, a bit partial to the odd swear word, so I'll drop the swear word. But he basically said, "Welcome to Hawthorn, Fish. Yeah. Get used to it."
Yeah.
I have these moments, and probably everyone does, but I had this moment where, actually, this is what I'm looking for, and it's not the club's job to adjust to me. It's my job to adapt to them.
Yeah.
And I'm walking down corridors looking at photos and pictures and meeting people like Alan Jeans and thinking my heroes of my childhood. And I was like a kid in a lolly store.
You know?
So it was a great place to be at 31.
Yeah, a right place for you at that time.
Perfect place, yeah.
And extraordinary too, and I don't want to gloss over this, but extraordinary that in that time that you spent at Hawthorn, which was 5 years, that you would then be deemed to be part of their team of the century. I mean, that is extraordinary. That's not a long career.
Yeah. You know what? Were you
blown away by that acknowledgement?
Yeah. Ivan Moore, who is he's passed away. God bless him now. He was the one who broke the news to me.
Yeah.
Came to my office, and my instinctive response to that was obviously, "Wow, that's a huge honour." But it was questioning it. I said, "Are you sure that's a good idea? You know, how do you justify that?" So I do remember talking to him quite openly about that selection because it probably didn't sit super well with me then. And although the most significant honour, personal honour I probably received in footy was that.
Yeah.
He said, "Paul, we've exhausted this selection process. There's eight of us on the panel." He said, "We're picking a side to represent Hawthorn in the game tomorrow, the best side we can pick." Mm. In Ivan's words, he said, "In our mind, there's no better choice for second ruck to Don Scott than you."
Yeah.
And I'd never really considered that scenario, but that's the way they picked their side. And I remain to be incredibly humbled by it, incredibly proud of it, but also uneasy at the same time.
But it's not a frivolous football club. It's not a club that would make a decision like that without the due consideration given to that.
No, I respect that. And I've had not my battles at all. I've had people, Jeff Kennett, who I love crossing paths with, he's miffed by it and remains to be so. And everyone's entitled to their opinion. I know when I look at that Team of the Century painting that was done for the Hawthorn Team of the Century, I'm pretty sure I'm the only one in that side that's not pure Hawthorn. That came from another club. So, and the other little nice postscript to all that, Tim, is I told you about growing up being a Hawthorn supporter and mad loving Peter Hudson. You could not have dreamt in your wildest dreams that at 31 I'd go to play my first season at Hawthorn. I'd finish five seasons later and I would make the team of the century, and the artist Cooper.
Yeah, Jamie Cooper.
He painted me with my arm around Peter Hudson in that painting.
Yeah. I mean, without knowing your idolisation of him. Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't ever pick that.
That is extraordinary. So can I ask you this then? And it's like the question, who do you love most, you know, this child or this child?
Yeah, but it is. I know what you're going to do.
Yeah. Hawthorn, Essendon, after all of this, where do you feel like your heart is?
Strangely, the troubles that Essendon have found themselves in over the past few years have drawn me closer to the place.
Yeah.
I retired from football, even though I went back to Essendon for a year at 37. I retired feeling very much a Hawthorn person. What they did for me in that time, the life-changing experience that 5 years was, I could not deny. People find that hard to understand because I played in premierships at Essendon, and I don't deny those either.
Yep.
But just for purely a selfish, personal reason, my family started to love football again.
Yeah.
And that was a significant thing because at Essendon, my latter years there, none of them did. And
yep.
None of them really liked the footy club. So living and playing in that environment at home, away from them, was difficult. My family are all Hawthorn, mad Hawthorn supporters now, wife, kids, all that sort of stuff. And I have a incredibly passionate love of that footy club. Having said that, I share a very similar feeling towards Essendon. It might be hard for people to understand that.
Yeah. No, I've watched Bachelorette when they get down to two and they say they love them.
That's right. It is a bit like that. And it's such a nonsensical question anyway, but everyone likes you to have alignment.
Yeah.
But I'm when the phone rings in a session of footy club, I love to help if I can.
Yep.
And the same goes for Hawthorn. I know it sounds like I'm sitting on the fence, but I've been honest with you as I can.
Yeah.
I retired Hawthorn, but as I'm getting older, I love going to watch both clubs play. I love football, and I carry. There's no reason for me to be bitter about anything. I take all the responsibility for what happened in my footy career. Although people that do have control and make key decisions about you. At a certain window, I got it wrong in relation to me.
Yeah.
And I don't – that's okay. I hope I made amends when I went to Hawthorn and showed that at least I backed up my words with my actions in that period.
And post-footy?
Yeah.
Have you been happy and comfortable? Did you make that transition smoothly?
Well, back early in this interview, we spoke about not trusting footy at that time when I did my knee and my life became so much fuller at that moment. So it was family. It was I bought my first business at 19. I'm pathologically deluded thinking that I'm going to, I'd make a good businessman. but I do. I still want to take on the world. Yeah. And what I'm doing now is exactly that. I've been in business and I've done well, I've done poorly.
Yeah.
It's been quite a ride, but I know how I'm wired and I accept that as a person. And I think after all these years of being in business and starting my own business, this is my now fifth startup, I'm pretty good at it. And I know myself well and I think I'm really ready now as a businessman to do well and I hope I can. Yeah.
And just one final question then.
Yes.
If you could change one thing about your career, what would it be? If you could just change one thing, go back in time and change one thing.
Change one thing.
Yeah.
I would not grab the ball out of the ruck ever again.
In 84.
And I never did after that. I don't think I ever did do it after that. That would be the one thing I'd change. But you don't grabbing the ball out of the ruck as a 19-year-old is youthful exuberance.
Yeah.
And blissful unawareness, lack of awareness around, could have dished a handball. Had lots of options in that split second, but I took the one which was all about me. So I've tried not to ever since then.
Well, mate, we're running out of time. We could have gone on for a lot longer, but obviously we have time constraints. But it's been great catching up and having a chat to you.
Good to chat to you, Tim, always, mate. And I love your work. You know that, mate.
Make sure you follow Talking Footy on Twitter at Talking Footy. And use the hashtag TalkingFootyPod. Like the show? Well, subscribe and leave a review on iTunes.
We're talking footy.